Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another really good revision history podcast with me, Mr. Hutchison. This is episode 5, I believe, of the Richard and John series for the Paper 2 at Excel GCSE history exam, and this episode is going to focus on the importance of the church. So remember, guys, there are three main areas to this course. There's the reign of King Richard from 1189 to 1199, the reign of King John from 1199 to 1216, and just general medieval life during that entire period. So how are people living? Okay, so we've already been through the feudal system. We've already been through an overview of who these two kings were. We've already been through the features of labour service and the features of knight service, as well as the differences between life for people in the towns and in the country. So if you're not sure about any of those topics, please do check out the other 4 videos. But without any further ado, I'm going to move on to our 5th topic, which is the importance of the church. So here we go. Okay, the church had an enormous influence in medieval society. Okay, that cannot be overstated. The church, religion in general, was central to everybody's lives, apart from a very small pocket of Jewish people that lived in the country. Small but significant pocket of Jewish people. Everyone was deeply religious, deeply Christian, deeply Catholic, in fact. Okay, so belief was not in question. There was no theological debate. Everyone believed completely in heaven, hell, God, the devil, and purgatory. Okay, the church was also important as a sort of institution. It owned land, it owned property, and everyone was expected to go to mass and give the church a percentage of what they earn or their produce if they worked the land. Most people believe that God controlled everything. God would decide whether they went to heaven, to hell, and how long they would stay in purgatory. Because of that reason, pleasing God was vital, and it was the church that told people how they would do this. Okay, the other thing to remember about the church was that it was an international organization, so it wasn't just important in this country, it was important in every single Christian country in Europe, or you know, every single country within Christendom, which is the term we use to describe all of the countries that were Christian. It was structured like its own feudal system, with the Pope at the very top. Obviously, the Pope is in Rome, and then it had cardinals, archbishops, bishops, priests, deacons, all sort of moving down their system until you've got general church members and priests right at the bottom. Now, there was no sort of guidance on who was more important, the Pope or the King, and it depended upon the Pope. Which Pope, you know, as to how involved they would get with Christian countries and running the country. Some popes would leave kings to it, and other popes would really try to assert their dominance. And we think, of course, of Pope Urban and King John, you know, falling out over who should be Archbishop of Canterbury. You know, Pope Innocent III, checking my own knowledge there. Pope Innocent was an extremely militant king, all right? So he got really, really involved with the day-to-day running of countries and, you know, fell out with John as a direct result of that. The Pope was God's representative on earth. So regardless of who was more powerful, regardless of how much he got involved within the day-to-day running of countries, he was very powerful. He had huge authority. He did have to authorize the appointments of archbishops. Okay, the archbishop is a country's sort of head of the church. So in this country, we had the Archbishop of Canterbury. All right, so in this country, the Archbishop of Canterbury is the head of the Catholic Church. All right, and ideally, the king would want an archbishop that's on his side, because the archbishop is extremely powerful, has a lot of influence, and they would want somebody that's going to work with you rather than somebody that's going to work against you. On a day-to-day level, for the everyday person, they wouldn't know the king. They wouldn't know the king. There was no internet, of course. There was no TV, no radio. They wouldn't even know what the king looked like. But they would come... The Pope is the same for that matter. But they would come across their local priest. In nearly every village, every town, there was a church and a priest, and he was one of the most important people in the village. It was the priest that helped the poor. It was the priest that helped teach children to read and write. It was the priest who would be there when you're christened. It was the priest who would read you your last rites. Okay, so really, other than family, excuse me, the priest was the most central person to most people's lives, the most important person in most people's lives. And the priest was supposed to be everybody's guidance. It was supposed to be your guide to living a good life and to guarantee, you know, to give you the guidance about how you would guarantee your place in heaven. And for most people, that was the most important thing. That's what life was about. It's about guaranteeing your place in heaven. Everyone would have attended church service or mass, certainly every Sunday, certainly sometimes more often as well. And they would have also have held confession. There were monasteries where monks lived. There are about 900 of those up and down the country. And also monasteries would have looked after the poor and the sick. And we, you know, there's a clear link there to our medicine course. As you know, monasteries would have been used to help the poor and sick, but would have been focused on prayer, not on treatment. But that's for a different course. But again, just demonstrates here how important the church and priests were to people's lives. They looked after you if you were poor and sick as well. The church had a great deal of power and wealth. Okay, some of the incomes of bishops equaled that of the greatest barons. Okay, some bishops owned a lot of land. I've gone through that in the previous lesson. A lot of land went to the church directly, and they would be tenants and under-tenants, and they would have villeins and peasants working their land as well. So the church, very, very powerful. And of course, the Pope himself would also have the power to call a crusade, which of course Pope Gregory does when Saladin takes Jerusalem back from the Christians in 1187 at the Battle of Hattin. So the reason why Christianity ruled people's lives was this whole idea of life after death. It was an idea of heaven, hell, and purgatory. Heaven is where those who have paid for their sins in purgatory join God. Hell is where those who are sinners, those terrible people that have done things, you know, that's where they go, and that's where they spend their eternity suffering pain. You know, there are some really great paintings about medieval depictions of hell with people being burnt and prodded and skewered, and it really was supposed to be the ultimate punishment. You do also have purgatory. Now, purgatory is sort of in between, and that's where you go to be punished for the sins that you have done before you can move up to heaven. Now, the amount of time you spend in purgatory is dependent upon the sins you've done. So the worse your sins were, the longer you spent in purgatory. But again, everybody believed this. And this is important for us because it directly fuels people's mentalities and therefore their actions. You know, this is one of the reasons why Richard went on crusade. It's one of the reasons why many people joined him as well. The influence of the church itself can be split up into spiritual, economic, social, and political. Okay, so as I've mentioned before, some priests were tenants and chiefs and owned land. So, you know, they would have been important in that respect. They were well educated. They could read and write, which, of course, most people couldn't. Okay, and they ruled their own sort of little pocket of land in that respect. As I said, they taught people to read and write. The church would have had large collections of books. Remember, back again, linking to our medical course, books were extremely expensive because they were handwritten by monks. It also meant the church controlled all sort of knowledge and thinking. So, you know, books would have been kept in churches as well. Monasteries, nunneries would have looked after the sick and poor, and churchmen as well would have played roles in the law courts. They might have sat as judges, and they might have had a say in whether somebody was guilty of a crime. Economically, don't forget, the church, extremely wealthy, would have had its own land, okay? It would have received rent from people that worked and lived on their land. People would have frequently donated money to the church, because one of the ways they could have guaranteed getting into heaven. And also spiritually, it was the priests that guided people's lives. It was the priest that told you how to live and taught you how to guarantee your place in heaven. Now, there were ways you could affect how long you would spend in purgatory. The ones that are highlighted are the ones that could be done by anyone, all right? But obviously, if you're on the podcast, you don't know what I'm talking about. But you could spend less time in purgatory for a number of ways. You could go to church every week, pray for forgiveness. You could donate money, have prayers said for your soul. So obviously, the richer you are here, the more likely you are to go to heaven in that respect. Some wealthy people are able to pay for special chapels to be built as well, and so people could say prayers to save your soul. You could help improve the lives of the poor by giving them poor money or clothes. You might go on a pilgrimage. A pilgrimage was a religious journey, and the longer you went, the further you went, the longer you traveled, the more of your sins would be forgiven. And linked to that, the ultimate pilgrimage, of course, would be Jerusalem. And after 1187, when that fell into the hands of Muslims after the Battle of Hattin, when Saladin reconquered it, you could go on crusade. You could go on crusade and fight to get that back, and that would almost guarantee your place in heaven. But as you can see from those, the medieval idea of doing things to spend less time in purgatory, it was easier if you were rich, because you had the money to just pay for prayers to be said for your soul, or you had the money to donate to charity, or you had the wealth to build a church. And, you know, those things were all ways you could spend less time in purgatory. So, you know, it was easier if you were rich. But essentially, ladies and gentlemen, you just need to know the importance of the church, why it was central to people's lives, and, you know, why it was powerful. You need to know about the power of the Pope himself, and also the influence of the individual priests in towns and in manor houses, not manor houses, on the manors, and how they influenced individual, everyday people's lives. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the importance of the church. I hope that's been useful to you. That should give you a nice broad overview of why the church was important to individual people. That's it, really, for medieval lives. We're going to start now focusing on the reign of Richard and the Third Crusade in the next video. So I hope you'll join me again for that one. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, keep working hard, and I'll see you next time. Take care.